is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
One of the big projects that I took on last spring that I was pretty happy with the way it turned out was creating a curriculum for our basketball program so that at each level, here's what I would like the players to be able to do, hopefully by the end of each grade level.
Jeff Huber is in his third season as the boys' head basketball coach at Westlake High School in Westlake, Ohio. Huber previously spent 9 seasons as the boys' head coach at Holy Name High School in Parma Heights, Ohio. Jeff was named the 2016-2017 and 2017-2018 Great Lakes Conference Coach of the Year, as well as the 2017-2018 Greater Cleveland Basketball Coaches Association Divisions 2-4 Coach of the Year. Prior to his stint at Holy Name, Huber was the head coach at Lake Ridge Academy in North Ridgeville, Ohio, where he led the team to the most wins in school history and its first winning season in a decade. He got his start coaching at Westlake High School as an assistant boys basketball coach and head freshman coach from 2005 to 2009. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is T.K. Griffith, boys' head varsity basketball coach at Archbishop Hopin High School, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit QuickCut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Be sure to grab your notebook before you listen to this episode with Jeff Huber, boys basketball head coach at Westlake High School in the state of Ohio. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinsling here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, but I am pleased to be joined by the head coach at Westlake High School in Westlake, Ohio, Jeff Huber. Jeff, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
Excited to have you on. Always good, as I always say, to have local guys on the show. So excited to get a chance to talk to you, figure out what you're doing over there at Westlake, and get to know you a little bit better. Want to start out by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about your first experiences with the game of basketball, what you remember.
You know, Mike, it's interesting. I would tell you that probably one of my very first memories is a real young kid. I grew up in North Carolina the first couple years of my life. And one of the first things I ever remember is sitting on my dad's lap watching North Carolina basketball games when I was probably 3 and 4 years old. And just so grew up kind of as a Tar Heels fan. And I just remember that so fondly and just always loved the game. And so I've been playing it for, you know, as long as I can remember. And so it's something that really has been a part of my life for, you know, my entire life, and has been just such a big part of it, and so many ties in really to almost every part of my life, and very, very blessed in you know, the experiences that it's brought me.
Excluding Michael Jordan, who's your favorite Tar Heel of all time?
excluding Michael Jordan, you know, I guess probably as a kid, it, you know, it was probably Brad Doherty, because I was such a big Cavs fan growing up, you know, so I love Brad Doherty and love those Cavs teams. And so I'd probably have to say him.
I grew up a Carolina guy too. I have no reason. I didn't grow up in North Carolina. I have no real reason for being a Tar Heel fan. I even liked them before Jordan got there. So the season before, when Carolina had Al Wood and they played against Isaiah Thomas, that was when President Reagan got shot immediately before the game. Yeah. And so for whatever reason, I don't know if it was the colors. I have no idea what it was. And then obviously when Jordan came around, that just kind of cemented my love for Carolina. I used to have a buddy in high school who, he was a big Georgetown fan. So he and I would always go back and forth. And of course the, the big shot down in the Superdome when Jordan hits that was, gave me some bragging rights in, I think in middle school at that point. So it was, ever since then, I've been a Carolina fan. I think I've shared this one other time on the podcast, Jeff, that when I was a kid, we used to drive down to Hilton Head, South Carolina for family vacation. And every year I would beg my mom and dad, I'm like, we got to stop. I wanted to get a Michael Jordan North Carolina jersey. So this was right in the height of when he was during his 3 years at Carolina when we were going. So I was probably at that point, I was like 11, 12, 13 years old. And I could never find one. I mean, we'd go and stop at like the mall in North Carolina, these different malls and stores, and then nobody couldn't find them anywhere. And now, of course, you could find it a million times over. But as a kid, it killed me that I was never able to find a Jordan jersey.
That's funny. Well, you know, one of the cool experiences that I had was I actually, when I graduated from college, did a year of law school at Washington University in St. Louis. Before I went back and got a teaching degree and got into coaching. And it was in 2005. And when I played high school basketball at St. Ed's, and I played with Juwad Williams, who then, you know, later went on to play at North Carolina and play for the Cavs. It was the year that they won the national championship in St. Louis. And they beat Illinois in the national championship game. And I actually was at that game. And that was a great, you know, Illinois, I think, was maybe undefeated or had one loss that year. And North Carolina had a great team, too, with Juwad and Sean May and Raymond Felton and all those guys. And so it was a pretty cool experience to be able to be there, one, knowing someone and having played with someone, and two, seeing a team that you grew up really rooting for win the national championship.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the things that being able to be in the building. I've been to a few NCAA tournament games over the course of my time. I never have been to a Final Four or a final game, but every NCAA game that I've been to has been just a completely unique experience, just because of how passionate all the college fan bases are. Obviously, once you get to the NCAA tournament, even schools that maybe aren't necessarily traditional basketball schools still get their fans and alumni to come out. And so it's always just a fun, fun atmosphere. I've been to this. I've seen games at the Silver Dome. I've seen games at the old Omni in Atlanta. I've seen games at the Capitol Center in Washington, D.C. So all were just, again, just incredible opportunities to go and watch great basketball and just see the passion that people have for college basketball. It's one of the weird things that I don't know about you, but how closely do you follow college basketball anymore?
Oh, I still follow pretty closely. I mean, I love it. Although I would say that I guess I follow it now because having, you know, coached a couple of kids that are playing at various levels, I like to follow them. But I guess the style of play, it's just funny. I just had this conversation. We at Westlake this weekend, we had a retired Division III coach come in, and he was working with our guys a little bit on a couple of things. And I was talking to him afterwards, and we were talking a little bit how I think stylistically, I feel like sometimes the game feels so coach controlled that I don't probably enjoy the style of play as much as I once did. But so, yeah, that would probably be, I guess I would say that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think from a college basketball perspective, you think back to sort of the heyday. So you go back to the 80s, maybe early 90s, and that was just a time where it felt like college basketball was, if not more bigger than NBA basketball, it was certainly on par with NBA basketball at the time in terms of its consciousness with the public. Whereas now I feel like it's kind of slipped a little bit just because, again, you don't have players like Michael Jordan staying at North Carolina for 3 years, or Patrick Ewing's at Georgetown for 4 years, or Ralph Sampson's at Virginia for 4 years. Like, those things just don't happen anymore, and you don't get an opportunity to know these guys as much as college players. The best guys obviously are in there for a year, and now a lot of them aren't even bothering to go to college basketball, whether they're doing the G League or this new overtime elite or whatever's going to happen. It'll be interesting to see how that all shakes itself out as we go forward. But I think, as you said, one of the things that's interesting about college basketball is you do have a variety of different styles of play, whereas in the NBA, obviously with the defensive rules and the way that – and just the guys are so talented that you don't have as much variance in the game. So I think from a coaching perspective, the college game is interesting to watch because you just have teams playing all different kinds of styles.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is true that when you said that about the players staying around, you know, I was just thinking in my head, you know, I could probably still tell you, you know, most of the rosters off of some of those teams that I grew up watching. And now I'd be lucky, you know, I still watch a lot of games, but I'd be lucky if I could tell you, you know, more than a couple of players on any given team.
Exactly. They're just guys just aren't household names in the same way. When you get to the tournament, guys then I think get that spotlight put on them, but it's not the same where you were following. I used to read the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook, so I would know every team, and then I would look at all the top 50 high school players and know what schools they went to and what their stats were. And I'm like, well, this guy's 6'9", 230 in high school. Holy cow. You know, I remember reading about J.R. Reed when, you know, before he went to North Carolina, and just the quote was, you know, he's got an NBA body right now and he's 16 years old or whatever. And it's interesting how the college game has changed. I think the game is still evolving, and we're going to figure out 10 years from now. I'm not sure exactly what it looks like when you factor in like the NIL and you factor in the fact that these teams, NBA teams, are trying to start to go towards this academy stuff where they're going to try to model it maybe a little bit after European soccer. I think 10 years from now, it's going to be really interesting to see what the basketball landscape looks like, because I think it's going to be completely, completely different. Thinking back on your time at St. Ed's, what do you remember as a high school basketball player? What are some of your best memories from playing high school?
Well, certainly it was a pretty cool time to be there. You know, my sophomore year was the year that the St. Ed's won a state championship, and just being able to the talent of the guys that were on that team, you know, with Steve Logan and Sam Clancy and Steve Lepore, was just an absolutely incredible group. So just watching that was fun, and then just the atmosphere of the games, you know, always, like, obviously the St. Ed's St. Ignatius rivalry is such a big rivalry, and so, you know, being in that was a really neat experience. And I think just the competitiveness on a daily basis, you know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, that I've experienced as a coach, and thinking back to my playing days, you know, there's certain places. One of the things that is, you know, great about a school like St. Ed's is that, you know, you really have to be very competitive on a daily basis. And I think that just really is part of the reason why a school like them has been so successful, is that's just kind of ingrained there. And so, you know, that's really something that we're trying to do at Westlake as well. But, you know, I remember that, and just feeling like everything seemed like a big deal. And so it was just kind of cool to be a part of that. And then like I said, to see so many great players and those guys I mentioned before, and then to play with Juwan, like, it was really fun to, you know, be around that. And that was a pretty neat experience.
As you finish up high school, what's your thought process as far as what you want to do as an adult? You mentioned earlier that you went to a year of law school. Was that sort of your thought, that, hey, I'm going to go and get my 4-year degree and then go on to law school and be a lawyer? Or were you thinking something else when you first went to school? Was coaching even on your radar at that point? Just give me an idea where your head was at when you graduated from high school.
Yeah, you know, I always loved the game, and I think it was always kind of on my radar. But, you know, when I was my senior year of high school, you know, I had my mindset on playing in college, and had looked at a bunch of Division III schools, and So that was really my first priority, was trying to find a place where I could get a good education and play basketball. I didn't really know what I wanted to do as, you know, beyond college at that point. And so I actually started out at the College of Worcester, and I spent a year and a half there. And then I ended up transferring to Ohio Wesleyan and finished out my playing in school there. And really, I would tell you now that it was really primarily a basketball driven decision, both of those, just because I love playing and I wanted to continue to play. And then as I got, you know, towards the end of my experience at Ohio Wesleyan, probably like a lot of college kids, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I thought law school would be a, you know, certainly would be a good thing to be able to have and use. And I went to a year of law school, and there was a lot of things about it I liked, but there were some things that I kind of felt like weren't really the right fit for me. And, you know, my family's, you know, both of my mom was a longtime teacher. My dad taught for a little bit before getting out of it. So education was kind of, you know, instilled in our family. And so it was something that I'd thought about. And then as I was finishing up my year of law school and trying to think, you know, when I kind of had realized that I didn't think I was going to continue with that, you know, as I thought about what I would want to do, you know, coaching was always front of mind, because I think I just loved the game so much, and it was a way to get back. And I also really, you know, I always enjoyed school. So I was excited about the opportunity to teach as well. And so the chance to do those two things and kind of put those two things together was a pretty appealing to me. And next thing, you know, that was 17 years ago. Now here we are.
Absolutely. It's amazing how fast those years go. They go really quick. What was your first experience coaching wise? What do you remember about the first time you got to sit on the bench and coach a team?
So I first started out when I was actually doing my student teaching at Lakewood. I did a little bit of scouting at Westlake, and then I became the freshman coach shortly thereafter. And I finished that experience when Bob Patton Jr. was the varsity coach at Westlake. And you know what I remember now as I think back on it was just how, you know, I think as a young coach, and especially just young, both in terms of experience and in terms of age at that point, you know, you kind of come in feeling like you got to really prove yourself. And I don't think I was ever really, you know, over the top boisterous, but I would certainly say I was probably a lot more demonstrative than I am now. And, you know, you come in really with, you know, kind of like some degree of fire and brimstone. And I think that, like, you know, as you get into this a little bit more, you and mature a little bit, you start to see that there's more than one way of doing that. But that's kind of what I first remember, is just like certainly being so excited. And I also think one of the things that I realize now is as I look back, I bet when I was 24 and first starting out, I think I probably thought I knew more then than I do now, you know, like it, which of course is not the truth, but I think that now I have the realization to realize there's always just so much more to learn. And then I was pretty much sure I had it figured out, you know? So like, as I've gotten a little bit older and hopefully a little bit wiser, I've realized that, you know, you're never going to really fully figure it out. So it's good to keep learning and trying to, you know, keep improving your craft.
That is so true. And I think when I look back on my start as a coach, and I think about the fact that I played for one high school coach, I played for one college coach, and basically my entire repertoire of coaching knowledge came from those two guys in terms of, well, what kind of drills do we do? What kind of offense do we run? What kind of defense do we play? What kind of terminology should I be using? And I was one of those guys, just like you, it sounds like, that, I mean, I kind of figured I was a pretty good player. I know what I'm doing, and I probably didn't go out and study the game as much of, as I look back on it, I wish I would have. And I probably would have ended up being a much better coach than I was for a long time, because I just kind of relied on my own personal experiences instead of trying to go out and learn from other people who had success in the coaching profession. I just kind of stuck in my lane. And I think that probably held me back. And I think it's a great lesson for young coaches, as you said, when you think about where you are now in your career, 17 years in, and you're telling people, hey, I know less today than what I thought I knew when I first stepped in the gym. And I can completely and totally relate to that. I'm sure there's a lot of other coaches that are sort of in our stage of life that would feel the exact same way. So if you're a young coach that's out there, don't just take your own experiences that you have as a player and for coaches that you've played for, but really go out and try to study the game. And now, obviously, it's way easier than it's ever been to be able to get access to other coaches, what they're doing, whether that's through things you see on YouTube or internet or webinars. And there's just so many more ways to grow as a coach than there ever was back in the time when you and I were first starting.
Without a doubt. And I think, too, with that said, one of the things that I would have never been able to do early on that is still not easy. I mean, admittedly, it's still not easy for me, but I've gotten a lot better at is just like, you know, admitting to my players that there's times when I don't know, or I got to think about that, or like, you know, not feeling like you got to have all the answers, and that if you don't have all the answers, that somehow you're going to be exposed. So I think that's been another thing that has really kind of evolved for me as time has gone on. And like I said, I still don't have that mastered, but I've gotten certainly a lot more comfortable with being okay with, you know, not feeling like I have to know every, you know, be there to answer every single question that they might have right in the moment.
When did you start to feel confident enough that you could look at your team and say, hey, I'm not sure about that, or hey, maybe I didn't do that quite right, or maybe I would have approached it differently now seeing what happened? Because I think a lot of times that's something that as a young coach, you don't want to show anybody that vulnerability. And so you tend to just kind of put on this bravado instead of being a little bit more open with your player and saying, hey, I don't know that. When did you start to feel comfortable with that as a coach?
I think there were two things that helped. One, quite honestly, was when in my first experience as a varsity, well, I guess my second experience as a varsity coach, I had 1 year where I coached at Lake Ridge Academy in North Ridgeville, and then I went to Holy Name. And I would say probably one thing was when we started to have some success on the court, because I felt like, you know, it gave me a little bit more credibility. But I would also, so that would probably have been the first thing. But I do also think that just in the last couple of years, I've really been making an effort to, I think, you know, be a little bit more vulnerable with my players. And I think that especially now, so this may be something that we talk about later, but for me, part of the reason that I made the move from Holy Name to Westlake was the fact that I've taught at Westlake now. This is my 16th year teaching here, and the ability to be in the building every day with the kids that play for me has really been a really great experience. And now that I feel like, the having the chance to really enrich those relationships by seeing those kids all the time. I mean, I felt like I had good relationships with the kids I had at Holy Name, but it's just different when you're like running into practice, going to practice, and then like feeling like you want to get home because you want to see your family. The fact that I see these kids on a daily basis has allowed me to get to know them, or for us to get to know each other in a way that makes me feel more comfortable, you know, being a little bit more vulnerable in that way. So I would say those two things have really led to that.
Do you think it would be difficult now to go back to the point where you weren't teaching at the school where you were coaching? So now that you've experienced both, obviously right. Before where you're coaching, you're not in the building, you don't know, you haven't had the other experience. I guess you did as an assistant at Westlake, but as the head coach, to be able to just the communication, the ability to build relationships, I would think that now if you were to ever get back to a situation where you weren't in a building, that that would be difficult based on the fact that, hey, I'm in the building every day. I see now how valuable that is to be able to have those touch points with kids day in and day out, whether you're seeing them in class or you're seeing them before practice, or you can stop down and eat lunch with them or whatever it might be. Just talk a little bit about what you've been able to do with your players because you're in the building versus what you were doing when you were at Holy Name.
Yeah, well, all those things you just mentioned, right? So like you said, the ability to, you know, have kids come in for lunch, and it could be just come in for lunch and let's just, you know, talk about our fantasy football team, or it could be come in for lunch and let's watch a little bit of film, you know, things that didn't have the ability to do. I do think, you know, I would never say never, but I think it would be really hard to go away from that. I think, like you said, there's just so many little things, right? And it's not like it might not be a 20-minute conversation. It might be just a 30-second interaction that you have with the kid in the hallway that is meaningful both for the kid and for me as a coach. And so to go away from that would be really difficult. But yeah, I mean, like you said, the ability to pull a kid in at some point during the school day, whenever I need to, is great. The ability to, like, we had our kids come in yesterday morning for just like 25 minutes in the morning, just to walk through some out of bounds plays to free up some time to practice after school. And that's something that I wouldn't have been able to. So just like the flexibility to do things like that, the ability to have these kids to be able to interact with the other students and try and get the other students that I have in class interested in the basketball program. And we've got some of those kids now helping out as managers, or even just trying to get more kids to come to games and maybe, you know, now that those kids, they know me because I'm one of their teachers, like it helps with that. So there are really so many things that, so many advantages to being in the building that it absolutely would be difficult to go away from that.
Yeah, I could see that being, once you've experienced it in the building, I would have to imagine it would be really, really difficult to go back and do it the other way. When I was coaching at Richmond Heights, I was teaching in the elementary school, which is where I'm still today. But in our building, our high school is literally right across the parking lot. And even then, as a varsity assistant coach, there was lots of times where I felt disconnected from our coaching staff, from our players, like there'd be a change in the practice time, or maybe there was an announcement or something that was just going to be different. And I would always be the last person to know that. And even though I was literally 100 yards away across the parking lot, I still felt that disconnect. And so I was teaching in the district, and yet I still didn't feel like I was able to build the same kinds of relationships, seeing those kids during the school day, in lunch, in the hallways, all those little things that you mentioned. I think it makes a really, really big difference. So when you think back to those first experiences that you had at Westlake when you were coaching the freshmen and you were helping out with the varsity and the JV team, what do you remember about being an assistant coach that, as you look back now and you think about that time in your career, that you learned that have helped you, that's helped you to be a better head coach over the course of your career?
Well, I think two things that I remember from my early experience when I was coaching there that probably really helped me with when I was coaching for Bob Patton was, one, that he let me coach, right? So I was the freshman coach, and there were some basic things that were important to him, but I never felt like I was really being micromanaged. And so I had the ability to learn and make mistakes and, you know, really do things for myself. And of course, you know, could go to him or other coaches as a resource, but I think the ability to coach, right? Like, I think that, you know, when I think of this now, I try and do this for my assistants is, you know, give them some parameters, but, you know, I trust those guys. I hire them because I think they're good coaches and I want to let them have the ability to coach because I think it's important in their development. So that would really have been one big thing that I got out of that. And then also, I think not, you know, I remember he was very good about like, hey, you got your team. If you want to come and help out with the varsity stuff on top of that, great. But you've got your team, and then, you know, you got to have some time outside of this. So that was the other thing that I really appreciate and that I try to convey to our coaches now is like, I want you to be as involved as you want to be. But like, if we have a varsity practice that's before a freshman practice, you know, like, or whatever, I don't want you to feel guilty if you're not popping in to watch some of what we're doing beforehand. You know, it's like, this is something we do because we love it, but there's other things going on in everybody's life. So I think just like the ability to recognize that we all need to have some balance as well, and not feeling bad about having that balance.
That's absolutely a challenge, and I don't care what level it is that you're coaching at, and whether you're a head coach or you're an assistant coach, the level of commitment that it takes to be a successful high school coach all across the country, I think is so much higher today than probably it even was when you started. And certainly if you go back 20 years, 25 years, what's expected of a high school coach in terms of the amount of time that your players, the families, your community expects you to put in, when you think about summer workouts and open gym and summer league and getting kids in the weight room and then watching film and scouting. Just there's so many things now that require so much time. How do you look at that ability? You have two daughters that are 9 and 7. How do you look at balancing your love and your passion for coaching with, obviously, the most important thing in your life is still your family? So how do you look at making sure that both of those things are getting the best of you day to day? And obviously none of us handle it perfect. And I'm sure there are days where you look at it and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that I spent all this time here or there or whatever. But just talk a little bit about how you handle that piece of it.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I know I've heard you guys talk about, you know, one of the things that changed for us in Ohio last year was the changing of like the 10-day rule over the summer and now having more, you know, an unlimited days to do stuff with your team, which on one hand, as someone who, you know, loves coaching, it's a good thing. But on the other hand, there's part of me that like that because it kind of set a boundary for you. And I think that now it's like, you know, even though I know better, there's part of me, and I'm sure a lot of coaches feel the same way, yep. that feels like, well, we should be doing something because I'm sure somebody else is doing something, you know? And that pressure is certainly not a positive thing. And so I think you really got to fight that. For me, and like you said, as the head coach, there's always something that I could be doing. And I really do pride myself on trying to do everything I can and to make the program as good as it can be. But at the same time, I don't ever want that to come at the expense of, you know, what the time that I have with my family and my girls. And so there's a couple things that have been important to me. First of all, I mean, my wife is phenomenal. So she played basketball at Youngstown State. So she loves the game and she is, you know, incredibly understanding of the time and the commitment that I put into it. And so that makes a huge difference. And then, you know, my girls love being around the team. So they'll, you know, come to the games. They'll come when I'm talking to the team after the game, they'll come in the locker room and they every day when I come home, they're asking me how practice was and how this kid played and that kid played. And so like, that's super cute. And it like makes my day. Like I, you know, even if we have a bad practice or a bad game, I can't help but smile when they're like peppering me with questions about the team. And so that is really fun for me that they want to be a part of it. But at the same time, it's also like, you know, I'm coaching both of them, which it's funny because when they were younger, it was something I thought I would never do. Like I thought, you know, I would just want to watch them play for someone else. But as they've gotten a little bit older, I feel like, you know, if in a couple of years from now, I won't have that opportunity to do that anymore. And I coached my oldest daughter's now in fourth grade, and my wife and I coached her team last year as third graders. And it was so much fun. And it was just time that I thought was so valuable to be able to spend with her. And so I think, you know, so trying to have balance, I got a great assistant coach who's got two sons. And so we kind of can help each other out. Like if I got to, our kids are lifted and I got to jump out early to get to my daughter's practice, you know, like that's not something I feel bad about doing, you know, he can stay there, you know. So I think we've, you know, I've tried to establish that balance, and I like having the girls around too, because and my family around too, because I think it's also sets a good example for the kids on the team that, you know, that obviously family is important to me and that, you know, I want them to be part of it. And so, yeah, it is always a struggle to feel like there's something else you could be doing. But I really try to keep first things first. And like you said, I'm not perfect. There's days when I come home and I'm upset about something that happened and I'm not as present as I'd like to be. And you know, that bothers me when I reflect on that. But I've really tried to become aware of that so that for the most part, when I'm here, I'm here, and that I don't, you know, lose that time. Because during the season, as you mentioned, sometimes there's not a lot of it. So we really got to make the most of it.
Two questions for you. First, do you think that the unlimited summer contact is going to stay? Is that going to stay in place? What's your feeling on that?
I guess I would say yes, because I feel like most things, like once you give it, it's hard to take it away.
Right.
So I kind of feel like it is here to stay. And like I said, I have really mixed feelings about it, but my guess would be it's probably not going anywhere.
All right. And then two, describe what you guys did this summer. So just so people have an idea of, okay, Jeff's got unlimited access to his players. What exactly did you guys do this summer to try to get that balance where you're doing what you need to do in order to get your program and your players where you want them to be, and yet not completely burning yourself, your staff, your players out?
Yeah, so what we did was, you know, June is obviously the busiest month for us because, you know, we have our summer leagues and our shootouts going on. So we did, you know, some practices right at the beginning of the summer to kind of prepare a little bit for that. And then throughout June, we were busy. You know, we had youth camp, we had, in which our kids would work. So we would have open gyms that would kind of back up to that and lifting, and then we would play. So June, we had stuff going on. I would say most weekdays we had stuff going on in June. Once we got to July, you know, we probably were going either 3 or 4 days a week, some combination of open gym. We had some open gyms with other schools, lifting. You know, we were fortunate. One of the things that we did at Westlake this year that's been a really nice thing is contracted with T3 out of Avon, so which is now doing all our strength and conditioning, and they actually come out to the school and do it, which has been great for two reasons. One, because it takes one thing off of our plates as coaches, and two, because, you know, like I think I knew enough to do an okay job, but I'm not an expert in that. So to have people who really are trained in that and come out and do that has been, I think, a real game changer for us. So that was, so we were consistent with the lifting, open gym or shooting throughout July. And then August, we were just, T3 was just running our lifting. But to try and create some balance, you know, our coaches would kind of divide up the schedule. So I didn't ask all our coaches to be at everything, and I wasn't at everything. So we would kind of divide it up so that we made it manageable commitment for everyone. And then, you know, our players, our core varsity guys were very committed, but we've got a bunch of guys who are doing summer baseball. We have a couple guys who are doing football or soccer. And so, you know, try and sit down with those guys at the beginning of the summer and just get everybody on the same page. And so, you know, the goal is to create enough opportunities for everybody to work as much as they want to and get better, while at the same time not burning everybody out and not making the kids, you know, one of the things, the conversations I've had with our kids, and it's been pretty, you know, I think it's been a good thing since I've been at Westlake in terms of the coaches being able to work together, is not making the kids feel like they've got to make a choice. And if they go to baseball on this day and not basketball, or basketball, not football, that like they're in trouble. And so I think, you know, trying to be proactive, meeting with kids early on, getting everybody on the same page with calendars, has gone a long ways towards that, and just trying to create some balance, both, you know, between just basketball and everything else in their life. And then, you know, for the guys who do multiple sports, amongst the sports that they're doing.
How do you build relationships with the other coaches on staff at Westlake? So thinking about football, thinking about track in the spring or baseball, what kind of conversations you guys have as an athletic department around sharing athletes, for lack of a better way of saying it?
Yeah, we've got a bunch of three-sport athletes, well, a lot of two-sport athletes and a decent number of three-sport athletes. You know, we just left the SWC this year, but for the last couple of years that when Westlake was in the SWC, we had the most three-sport athletes. So that's something that's new to me. It's actually been an interesting experience. You know, Westlake is a school of, you know, let's say roughly 1,100 kids. And when I was coaching at Holy Name, that was about 600, 650 kids. But at Westlake, there's actually a lot more kids who are doing two and three sports than there are at Holy Name, in spite of the difference in the size of schools. And so that was something that was a little bit new to me. For me, it's really just been, I think, trying to communicate as much as possible with the other coaches. So anytime we have like our summer schedule, our spring schedule, I'm trying to get that to the other coaches right away. And actually, even before I create ours, I'm asking them for theirs, so that, you know, can try and minimize those conflicts in advance. And, you know, I'll say to them, hey, are there, you know, I'll talk to our football coach and, hey, in June, is there anything that is like absolutely critical, that a guy can't miss, and vice versa. They might ask me that. And so I think everybody's been pretty understanding that we got a lot of kids who are doing this and that we think that's a good thing. And we don't want to create antagonize each other or, you know, put undue stress on these kids about that. So I just think the communication, you know, being very proactive with that has hopefully minimized a lot of those issues.
It's one of those things that it's a difficult thing to navigate and to know how to handle it in the best way possible. And I think what it always comes down to for me is it should always be about the needs of the kid and what's best for the kid and not what's best for us as an adult or us as a coach of another sport or us as parents, whatever it might be. It should be about what's best for the kid. And I think if you frame how you handle two sport or three sport athletes or multiple sport athletes with the idea of I'm trying to do what's best for the kid to give them the opportunity to experience. Look, if a kid is good enough and wants to play multiple sports in high school, as you and I both know, those years go really fast and you don't get them back. It's not like you can decide, hey, I'm a 4-year basketball player, and then 2 years after I graduate, like, oh man, I wish I would have played a year or two of high school baseball or whatever it might be. And so I think that's always important to keep in mind. And you see it not just in this situation, but you see it in a lot of other situations where adults are making decisions to benefit adults rather than benefit kids. And that's really where I think you can get yourself into trouble as a coach, when you start making decisions that are best for you as the adult and you kind of forget about what's important for the kid. All right. Go ahead.
But I was going to say one thing that you said that kind of resonated with me was that I've talked to one of the things, you know, you said like you can't go back and do it again. And that's something that in the conversations I've had with kids, it's kind of been like almost any person that I know that's my age, or even, you know, people who almost no one regrets playing a sport. You know, I could tell you so many stories of people I've talked to that I wish I would have kept playing whatever it might be. But I can't tell you almost any stories of somebody's like, you know what, I really regret that I continued to do this sport, you know? So I try and encourage kids along those lines. If you're not sure, maybe as a freshman, you know, give it a shot, you know, and then if you don't have a great experience, you can always stop. But like, now it's not unheard of that when you stop to come back, but it certainly gets a lot harder once you stop playing to come back later on. So I agree with you. You know, it's really about, you know, what's best for the kid and trying to, you know, give them the best experience in whatever sports they want to participate in.
Are you tired of slipping and sliding on the court and sticky sheets just aren't giving you grip? Grip Spritz solves this problem without having to lick your hand to clean your shoes. Grip Spritz is used by countless AAU, high school and college programs, semi-pro teams, as well as NCAA athletes and G League players. Unlike other products, Grip Spritz has solutions for individual players, not just entire teams. We've used Grip Spritz at our Head Start basketball camps and players love it. To keep you and your team from slipping and sliding, visit gripspritz.net to learn more. When you think about the difference going from Holy Name private Catholic school to Westlake public school, what are some of the biggest differences in coaching at a private school versus coaching at a public school that jump out at you when you first think about that transition?
Well, the biggest difference is the sub high school program, I guess. So, you know, when at Holy Name, you know, you're trying to keep tabs on CYO kids and you have open houses and kids shadowing. And, you know, certainly there is a good amount of work that's involved in that. And so that was something that, you know, put a lot of time into. However, at Westlake, it's a lot more. I mean, quite honestly, I guess I probably underestimated how much more it was, you know, and I certainly, this goes kind of back to what you were talking about before. You know, you could certainly kind of do it half-heartedly, but if you want to do it right, it really is a lot of work in terms of not just the middle school program and trying to, one of the big things for me was trying to align the middle school program more with the high school program. And I think now that we're in year three, we've really done that. I think we've got a really great middle school staff. We've got some alignment there. But then also like the third through sixth grade program. And I've been really blessed. We have a great assistant, Kevin Constein, who handles a lot of that stuff. But it still is a huge time commitment for me too, you know, just trying to help those coaches be present around those teams and those players. And then now this year, trying to, you know, Kevin suggested, and we're actually doing a little program for first and second graders. Unfortunately, he's taken, you know, I have assistants who are taking a lot of the work on that. But that's the number one difference is, you know, building up the program really from the ground level. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of satisfaction in seeing those kids improve year over year and getting to know those kids and building relationships with them. And, but it's a big, you know, but like you said, but that would be the number one difference. To that end, though, one of the things that, you know, after I got done with last year, in talking with our youth coaches, it seemed like, you know, I needed to do a better job of kind of giving them some guidance and not so much like guidance, like, hey, I want you to run this offense. Cause I can tell you after coaching my daughter's third grade team last year, there's not a lot of offense being run.
No, but more like, there's not.
No, but more like, how can I help these guys, like develop players better? So one of the big projects that I took on last spring that I was pretty happy with the way it turned out was kind of creating a curriculum for our basketball program that, so that at each level, you know, here's what I would like the players to be able to do hopefully by the end of each grade level. And of course there's a lot of variance within each grade, but as a general rule, here's the things I'd like them to teach and kind of came up with some ideas and linked it with some YouTube videos so that they can, it's pretty hopefully user friendly for them. And I think that's something that I'm hopeful will be of use to our players going forward. And then, you know, my goal would be like, there's certain programs that I watch that I'm like, you know, when you see them play, you're like, that kid is a, you know, like Mentor's an outstanding, obviously, public school program in this area. Like, you know, kind of what you're going to get when you watch a Mentor team play.
Right.
And so, you know, one of my longer term goals would be to do something similar at Westlake where, you know, if we can get these kids kind of fall along this curriculum and then also kind of develop the mental side of it as well, that someday people will say that about what we're doing there. So just the youth program would be the number one difference in terms of like what you're doing below the high school level. The advantage, of course, to all that time that you're putting in is that hopefully when they get there, they have learned some of the stuff that you want to do. You know, when you come from at Holy Name and you've got kids coming from 10 different CYO or public school programs, you know, certainly there's an advantage to that because you're getting kids from all over. The disadvantage to that is that you don't know what people have been taught or how, you know, what their experience has been before that. So that would be the trade-off.
All right. I want to jump back to your youth stuff. How do you put together that document, that curriculum? What are the things that are most important to you? If you had to pick out two or three of the things that when a kid gets done with grades 3 through 6, travel basketball in Westlake, what do you hope that they have in their bag when they get done with sixth grade, when they're ready to transition and become a middle school player? What are some of the skills that you told your coaches, hey, these are things that our players, we want them to be able to do. We want them, when somebody watches them play as a seventh grader, they can say, just like you talked about with Menner, you can say to them, wow, look, this kid came through the program. I see the things that they were taught as they came through the travel program. What are some of those, quote, non-negotiable things that you think are really important for your coaches to teach youth players?
Yeah, I would tell you that the first thing that I put in there for each grade level deals with what I would say are qualities of a good teammate that I think are age appropriate. And so it might start with, like, you know, using someone's name when you're communicating with them at the very youngest levels, or, you know, eye contact, or, you know, things like that. So each grade level, the first thing I put was kind of like, here's some qualities of a good teammate that I want to be taught. When a teammate comes out of the game, we should stand up and give that person five or acknowledge them in some way. Because that's one of the things that I noticed was, like, so many kids, things that that as a adult seem obvious that make up a good teammate, these kids just, they don't know. And it's really not their fault. I think a lot of them have just never been taught. And so making a conscious effort to teach those things. So I would first hope that someone would say, like, you know, win or lose, one, these kids are, you know, they're respectful, they play hard, and they're certainly very good teammates to each other. So that was kind of the first thing in each grade level that I put on there, was like 2 to 3 things that a good teammate, I think, could learn at that age. Beyond that, you know, certainly I didn't get, you know, obviously I want guys who could shoot the ball, right? I think we've all continued to see that that's just become, I mean, it's probably always been the most important skill, but certainly with the prevalence of three-pointers, it is such a critical skill. But at the youngest levels, I didn't put a ton about that. One, because I think that it's not necessarily fair to ask our youth coaches who are volunteering their time to be like shot doctors. And also because I think until kids get a little bit stronger, there's only so much that it's maybe not – you don't get the bang for your buck. So I would say a lot of the stuff we're doing at the younger levels, besides the kind of like how to, you know, be a good teammate, treat people with respect within the game, would be like certainly being able to handle the ball, working on, you know, having good footwork. And then I think for a big thing is, you know, working on our finishing. I think that's something that we can start to teach early on. And so that's something that put in there quite a bit. That's something that's featured quite heavily, I would say, at the younger levels, is, you know, just some fundamentals of finishing to go along with those other things.
How much do you get down to either see a game, stop in at practice? What's your personal amount of time commitment that you're making to seeing those kids and starting to build relationships? Obviously, we talked earlier about building relationships with your high school players by being in the building and seeing them and getting a chance to have lunch and bringing them in early before school. But what about those youth players? How are you starting to build those relationships with those kids and those parents? So those kids aspire one day to be Westlake Demons and they can get up there and be a part of your program and get to know you and say, hey, someday I want to play for Coach Huber.
Absolutely. So I would say a goal of mine is to try and get to a couple of games a season. Let's put it this way, at least one game a season of every team, and hopefully, you know, maybe two. And then I try to pop into a practice from time to time. Actually, one of the things I think I heard on one of your podcast at one time, which is not directly related to me, but creating some linkages in the programs, is we've now started doing where we have two or three of our varsity players will kind of assign to each of our youth teams. And I ask them to go to one practice every other week and help out. And, you know, the kids love it.
And, that's awesome.
You know, they look up to those guys. And it's been a really cool thing to kind of create some sort of bond where, one, our kids actually really like it. Like, once they get out there, they enjoy kind of goofing around with the younger kids and helping them out. And they really do a great job with it. And then the younger kids, of course, love it because they got these high school kids who are coming down and spending time with them and helping them. And so that's been a really nice thing for us. So I try and get to, you know, parts of practices from time to time. It's a little harder now when I'm coaching my daughter's team, but try and do some of that and then try and get to, like I said, at least one or two games to try and see our teams play.
What's it like coaching your daughters?
You know what? It is both incredibly rewarding and at a few moments incredibly frustrating. You know, I know there's another thing I've heard your past guests talk quite a bit about. You know, my daughter, who is in fourth grade, is really starting to develop a passion for the game, which has been fun to see. But, you know, it's been kind of baby steps. So there's times when, you know, when she will react to me differently than I know that she would react to any other coach. And I get that to some extent. You know, when I was a kid, my dad coached me, which was which I look back fondly. And actually, I'm still very, very lucky because my dad is still one of my assistants. And that's something that I enjoy the most about coaching is being able to spend that time with him. And now coaching her, I get that like, you know, it's hard to not see the coach as your parent too. And so I understand where that comes from. But at the same time, we try and have this conversation that you really got to treat, you know, me or your mom, and when we're coaching you, like you would treat somebody else. So that is something we're working on, and it's been, you know, a little bit of a process, but at the same time, there's so many great things about coaching your kids. You know, it's like, it's really that she's still at the age where she likes us coaching. So that makes it fun. And, you know, it's been fun for us to get to know some of the girls that she's friends with and to be around while she's developing. And just in the last year, she's really started to take off to the point where she's like, hey, will you come outside and shoot with me? And that's been kind of fun because, you know, I've always, you know, I would love for her to love basketball. And I think she's starting to. But I also want it to be because she loves it, not because I love it. And so there's times where I feel like, you know, I really want to say, hey, let's go do this drill. And she just wants to go out and shoot around. And absolutely. So I have to like really catch myself and be like, you know what? Yep, let's just go shoot around, you know, because what's most important is that one, that she wants to spend time with me, and two, that she wants to do it around basketball. So that's been, you know, something that I always have to remind myself, you know, like when I was a kid, I really loved going and shooting, and I would shoot forever. And like I would have like my Steve Alford drill and I'd be out there writing down my shots, but like, you know, and I love doing that, but that's not where she's at right now. She loves the game, but that's not what she does. And that's okay. You know? So it's just, and I think that's a challenge, both coaching her and just coaching in general, is realizing that not every kid has the same passion for the game that you had. And if you expect them to, you're probably setting yourself up to be a little disappointed at times. And so I think that's something that I've had to work through, both coaching her and just coaching the high school boys too.
I wish we could just capture that 3 minutes of audio and just send it out to every parent. Maybe we could just play it over the loudspeaker or the PA system at every AAU and travel tournament for parents to be able to hear, because I really feel like so many people try to impose what they want on their kids, and it's really, really difficult. And I think you set yourself up for, one, not getting the kind of success that you want as an athlete, whether it's basketball or any other sport. And two, I think it could be damaging to the relationship between a child and a parent when you're constantly dragging and you're constantly pushing and you're constantly saying, hey, you got to do this, you got to do that. And I often wonder, like, at what expense are you doing those things? And just like you, I struggled with that. I continue to struggle with it today. So I have a high school senior, my daughter, who doesn't play anymore. My son is a high school sophomore. He plays. And then I have my sixth grade daughter, whose team I'm coaching. And ever since all of them have been little, there's been times, and obviously just like you, I'm in a gym, I'm doing camp or I'm running training or whatever it might be. And I'm like, hey, you want to come along? Or hey, you want to go? And there's times where they'll say no. And I just kind of look, and in my mind, I'm kind of seething, like, you know, why don't you want to come? But you really have to remember that the journey is about your kids. And it goes back to what I said earlier, like, you got to ultimately, what you do and the decisions that you make should be best for the kid. And if you do that, especially with your own kids, obviously that's really important. And then I think you're just going to end up having a good experience, because you and I both know that the best players you've ever coached, the best players you've ever played with, are players that love the game, and they're good because they work on it, not because dad tells them to, or not because their coach is yelling at them. Those are kids who show up for everything you do in the summertime, not because Coach Huber says, hey, you guys got to be here. It's because that kid wants to be there. And then not only are they at the mandatory things, but they're out working on their own. And that's really how you get to be good. It doesn't come from parents. We can provide opportunity, which obviously just like your kid, just like my kids, your kids are probably going to get a lot more exposure to basketball than they get to other, right. You know, to other things. So they're going to get repeated experiences. But I know, like, I had my kids playing instruments and we tried all different kinds of sports and I never touched a soccer ball as a kid. And all my kids played some soccer, even though I never would have had any interest in it. So you just try to give your kids the opportunity to figure out where their passion lies. And then you go from there, but there's nothing better than coaching them. It's so much fun. And I loved your comment about they're not being much offense with third grade girls basketball. It just goes back to if you could teach them the intangibles of being a great teammate and maybe work on some footwork and some ball handling, man, you've done yeoman's work then if you're able to accomplish those things with a bunch of third grade girls. There's no doubt about that. I've been through that experience.
Yeah, and it's funny. I've had this conversation with multiple people and I was like, you know what? Like I felt coaching third grade girls made me feel like not that good of a basketball coach because you come from these high school boys and they're able to do some things and then you're going down here and you're like, oh my gosh. But I mean, I would tell you that I think it's made me and helped me become a better coach because you really have to learn how to teach the game in a different way. And so it really, like the beginning of last year, what I thought I had in mind to do with the girls compared to what we were doing at the end of last year, or we just started practice this week, what we're doing now, I've really had to reevaluate that. And I think, you know, fortunately I have, and what we're doing now is working better, but like it really is. I actually think it's a good thing for coaches to go coach at a different level because it really does give you a different appreciation for how to teach. And so that I think it's maybe a better high school coach for having come down and coached the younger girls.
And I also think it speaks to the fact that there are different coaches that are best suited for different levels. And there's coaches that could be great high school coaches and would make terrible youth coaches. And there's some coaches who you watch them with a bunch of 8-year-olds and they are dynamic and they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly how to teach them. They know exactly how to get them organized and keep them interested and keep them fired up and ready to go. And I think it's just when you talk about the coaching profession, I think it's really important for coaches to find their spot, to find their niche, whether that's high school coaching, whether that's middle school, whether that's youth, whether that's going and coaching in college. I think you can have great coaches at all levels. That's been one of the most interesting things about the podcast is just the opportunity to talk to coaches that are coaching AAU basketball, that are coaching youth basketball, that are coaching at the high school level, that are coaching in college, that a couple pro coaches that we've had on. And it's just there's great coaches at every level. And you got to figure out what works. And to your point, if you can cross back from one to the other, it requires a different way of preparing, a different way of thinking about how you're going to organize what it is that you do to maximize what your players can be and what your team can be. So along those lines, when you think about preparing your team for a given season, I'm not looking for a specific for this season, but when you think about looking at your personnel and your players and what you can do, how do you go about putting together how you want to play on both ends of the floor? What's your off-season prep like when you start thinking about the following season and making sure that you're going to put in things that are going to put your kids in position to be successful?
Yeah, I think that I have a general, by this point in my coaching career, a general philosophy on how we want to play. And then I try and make some tweaks within that. So, you know, we generally are going to play fast on offense and with a lot of freedom. You know, I think I can't remember if it might have been on one of your interviews. There's somebody who was talking about like we want our players to think like sharks. So the idea being that like, you know, a shark can attack within the ocean. So the ocean is like the boundaries that we're setting as a coach. But within the ocean, like you got a lot of freedom to do what you want to do. So we try and do that for our players. Like we're going to give you a framework. So it's not roll the balls out. But within that framework, you know, we want you to use the skills that we've worked on and the decision-making that we've worked on, and we're going to trust you to make plays. And it's not like you need to look over at the bench every time for us to call a play. So like in terms of offense, you know, we try and tailor our offense that way. So it's a little more conceptual, a little bit less like set play based. And we, But like we do evolve it a little bit. So like over the summer, we've made some tweaks since what we did over the summer. Over the summer, I saw some things for us offensively that I thought were going to be good for us that I didn't think were didn't work as well as I thought they would. And so we've stayed with a lot of the same concepts, but we've made some changes that I think are going to help us as we get into our season here. And then defensively, we want to be aggressive too. You know, I certainly respect the fact that there's a lot of ways to be successful, but I like coaching in a way that's more aggressive. So I think we're more aggressive. We try to be aggressive on both sides of the ball. And I also think that for our players, at least, our players enjoy playing that way. You know, we're not a team that has right now a ton of size. So I think trying to use our quickness and our speed to our advantage, both offensively and defensively, will help give us a great chance to win. If we had, you know, 3-6-8 kids, maybe we would tweak that some. But I guess maybe unfortunately, I don't see that as being something that's right on the horizon. So
something to worry about right now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So we'll kind of stick with what we're doing. But I like playing that way. I always, as a player, like playing that way. I like coaching that way. So we've tried to kind of, you know, create some boundaries and within that sort of framework.
How about practice planning? So that's sort of the big picture. Now you start breaking it down to the nitty gritty. Do you have a standard format for how you put together your practices where you're going 30 minutes of skill development, 30 minutes of half court offense, 30 minutes of half court defense and breakdown? Or just how do you organize your practices and what does that process look like when you're putting together a practice plan?
Yeah, so I try to each week have a little bit of an overview of the things I'd like to get accomplished that week. But then on a day-to-day basis, you know, we are very, I would say, games-based, very – like I would say one of my biggest influences as a coach has been like Chris Oliver in Basketball Immersion. Like, and actually he came out to Westlake this summer and did a 2-day clinic with our kids, which was fantastic. But I've been a big follower of his for years now. And I really like kind of teaching within 5-on-5. So we play a lot at practice. Now, not all 5-on-5. We'll do some 4-on-4, some 3-on-3, but we play a lot. And I believe that really does help with our transfer of what we're doing in practice to the games. Now that said, like we were working on some press defense stuff yesterday, and I felt like there were certain things that we were struggling with in a 5-on-5 setting. So today we kind of backed it up a little bit and broke it down a little bit more and then got right back into the 5-on-5. So we play a lot. Our kids like it. Like I was actually overheard one of our kids talking today about like, you know, practices, like, you know, cause we had a kid who sprained his ankle and he's like, oh, you're in Sinks, you can't practice. Cause like now that we're doing all the competitive stuff at practice, it's a lot of fun. So like we really yep. try and that's really the basis of our practices. And then, you know, one of the things that I've tried to do as a coach and evolve as a coach is really the application of constraints to whatever it is that we're trying to learn at practice. So like trying to create some rules within those drills to reinforce or to try and create certain situations. So that's been something I've been challenging myself on to continue to improve at. But we're going to play a lot. We'll do a little bit of breakdown stuff. We'll do a little bit of maybe some one-on-one finishing, maybe play a little bit of one-on-one each day, both to work on the offensive, defensive side, and then do some shooting. But beyond that, I would say almost everything else is a little bit of 3-on-3, but almost all 4-on-4, 5-on-5.
What's an example of the constraints that you might put on a particular drill to get your kids into a situation that you want them to be able to work on and to be able to see and to be able to get reps with?
Yep. So I would say for us offensively, one thing we're working on right now is this idea of like what we call, and I think this is a read and react term, circle movement, so that when the ball's penetrated, like if a guy drives right, other guys are moving right. So it almost looks like a wheel kind of, or that's why they call it circle movement. And so like we were working on something today where we were saying on offense, two things. One is we started off just saying the ball has to touch the paint before we shoot. So that was just to get everybody to move once. Okay. And then we added, okay, now the ball has to touch the paint twice before you can do it. Because like usually what I found was on the first drive, we were pretty good with our circle movement. But by the time we got to the second drive, you know, we were struggling a little bit more. So then we added the second drive to try and make sure that we could do this more than once on a possession. And then, you know, the other part of that constraint might be that we were trying to avoid consecutive drives. So we were trying to say like, we don't immediately want to drive, kick it out, and drive again because as a general rule, and of course, I would not say this is hard and fast, but as a general rule, when you drive once, the defense compacts, and if you throw it out and drive immediately again, you're driving maybe right back into a compacted defense. So we would say we want to penetrate pass, before we re-attack. So we would say, so like with the second drive, one of the rules was you have to get two paint touches, but it can't be a consecutive drive. There has to be a pass in between. And so just trying to apply some, and if you didn't do it, it was a turnover. So trying to apply some of those constraints to reinforce the principles that we want to play with within a game-like setting.
How do you balance out? I know one of the things that we hear from coaches, and we've had this discussion before on the pod, how do you balance out when you're doing the games-based approach and you want those reps and that decision-making to come from the kids? You obviously don't want to be dictating that from the sidelines, either in practice or in a game setting. But how do you balance out providing instruction with not interrupting the flow of the drill or the small-sided game or whatever it is that you're doing in the moment? I think that's something that I know personally that I struggle with, and I think there are a lot of other coaches that are trying to figure out, how do I strike that balance between I want our kids getting those reps, I want them making decisions, I want to put them in game-like scenarios, but I also want to make sure that I'm teaching and I'm giving them the type of instruction that they need. So how do you think about that, and how do you balance that in your practice setting?
Yeah, it's so hard. I think it's probably the biggest challenge. And actually this spring, I read a book that Doug LaMav wrote that was called The Coach's Guide to Teaching, which was just a phenomenal book and had a lot of information about this, like how we provide feedback within a practice. And one of the main points he said was that, as I read this, I was like, man, I'm guilty of this, was that we tend to, as coaches, kind of like overload players' working memory, where it'll be like, well, I saw these five things you did wrong, so I'm giving you five things you did wrong, and yeah. Now you're trying to think about five things and you can't do any of them, you know? So like one of the main points was that I'm trying to work on this year is like just give one and at the absolute most two pieces of feedback, and then do those until you get them right. Now, the hard thing is, you know, sometimes you'll see five things that are wrong, and it's really, really hard to like put off those other things, you know, but I've been trying to do that. So that's one thing, is like just giving focused feedback, just like we're about this one thing. And once we get that one thing, then we can go to the next. But the other thing in terms of, we do stop it quite a bit, you know, not at the expense of like having no flow to our play, but we will stop it. Or one of the things I've been trying to do more of this year is like, subbing guys in and out a little bit more when they need individual feedback. So if I see a mistake that's been made 3-4 times in a segment, okay, I'm going to stop it and I'm going to address it with the group because it seems like I've not conveyed this clearly enough, or it's a mistake that needs to be addressed amongst the whole team. Whereas if it's a one player that keeps making the same mistake, then you know what, let's get him a sub and let me pull him to the side and deal with him one-on-one. So that's been another thing that, you know, been trying to do to balance that out. But you're absolutely right. I mean, that's the biggest challenge. So I guess, you know, sometimes we'll do like a three or five possession segment, which allows for like some natural stoppages to reflect. But then like today we finished up practice with a couple like 3 or 4 minute quarters. And in those, I try not to stop it at all. But of course, you know, it's hard when you're seeing all the things you want to address.
Absolutely. It's very, very hard. One of the things that I've tried this year, and so I'm three practices in with my sixth grade girls. And just over the course of the last 3.5 years, I've learned so much from our guests. But one of the things that I've picked up repeatedly is putting an emphasis on certain things, which kind of goes to what you spoke about, where you can't fix 29 mistakes in the same 30-second segment. It's impossible. I could tell you all 29 of those mistakes, but no kid, high school boys, varsity player, sixth grade girl, you're not able to process all that and make changes. So what I've tried to do this year is I picked out three themes on offense, or three concepts on offense and three concepts on defense. And that's pretty much, I've decided, all I'm going to teach and all I'm really going to focus on. So I try to make sure that whatever drill we do, I'm focused on one of those things, whether it's an offensive concept or it's a defensive concept. And I'm trying to limit my coaching to those six things that I've identified. One, can help make players better. And then two, that I think can also impact our success in terms of wins and losses out on the floor. And like I said, I'm three practices in. I am by no means doing a great job of being able to just focus on those things. But I do feel like it's given me a way to focus, because I tend to be very much scattered all over the place with the way I plan practice, with what I'm seeing and what I'm looking at. And so this has really given me a way to kind of zero in on what I feel like is important. And it allows me to plan away from the practice setting where I'm not actually watching those mistakes take place in front of me, where I can say, what are the most important things that my team can take away from this season? If we do these six things, it doesn't matter what those other mistakes are. These six things are going to really help us to get better as individuals and to help us win. And so I guess I can provide updates over the course of the season as we go along. But it's been something that so far I think has worked well, and it's going to continue to work well as I sort of perfect it and get better at it as the season goes along.
Well, and I think that the key to that too is our discipline as coaches to stick to that. You know, like yesterday we had not a terrible practice, but not a great practice. And I came home and I was a little bit frustrated because of that. And then I was thinking about all these things that I feel like we got to do before our first game, which is still weeks away. But, you know, you start feeling this like we've got a million things that we've got to get in or get done before we play. And I was having a conversation with one of our assistants, and thankfully he's just like, you know what? Let's just get good at the things we're going to do a lot. Like, what is our basic man-to-man offense going to be? Or how are we going to basically guard the ball? And, like, you know, as opposed to try to do 50 things and do none of them well, let's just, like you said, let's just pick a couple things. Let's get really good at those before we worry about anything else. And so it's sometimes, even as much as we know that to be the case, it's, you know, you need that reminder. So it was good for me to get that reminder last night.
It's hard to do. It is so hard to do, to sit and be on the sideline and see a ton of mistakes and not want to point out and not want to coach and not want to do what we naturally do, which is try to help and try to make our players better. But as you said, I think the key word that you used was overload. You can't overload them, because we know that after 5 seconds or 10 seconds or after one concept, they've tuned you out. And the most you can hope for is they get that one concept and they get 5 or 10 seconds worth of instruction. And if you can discipline yourself as a coach to be able to give them just what they can handle, then I think you're going to ultimately end up with better results. You've talked a couple times about your assistant coaches and just how you utilize them and what you do and bringing them in and how you have to have trust in them. In a practice setting, how do you define roles for your assistant coaches? Do you have an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator? Is everybody kind of watching everything? Do you assign certain coaches to certain players? How do you guys organize that piece of it as a staff?
Yeah, so, well, a couple different ways. So one of the things that I have tried to do in the last year or so is, like, when I make out a practice plan now, I will put on the practice plan, like, hey, here's what I want Ryan to watch for in this drill, or here's what I want Steve to watch for in this drill. So I'll try and give those guys, like, one thing. And I think it goes back to the conversation we've been having. You know, sometimes I wonder when I see teams and I see – Eight coaches yelling at a kid, and they're all yelling 8 different things. And I'm thinking, again, what we're saying, like, this kid is probably taking none of this in. So I try and say, hey, here's the one thing I want you to watch. And so, it allows me to watch something else. And two, it allows them to give feedback on one thing that we think is important. And so that's one thing that I've done. And then also just kind of knowing what my strengths are as a coach, and knowing what our assistant strengths are. Our varsity assistant, Ryan Meehan, he's a fantastic shooting coach. So, like, I pretty much let him take that with our players for two reasons. One, because I think he's better at it than I am. And two, because I want our players to hear one voice on that. So I don't want them to be – he's working with them one day on shooting and telling them to focus on this, and then I'm coming in 2 days later and telling them something different. So that's been – you know, the other thing is, like, that's something that he kind of takes, is, like, what he takes the lead on. And then within a practice, I try and divide up points of emphasis within each drill. And then when we scrimmage, sometimes if I have more than one assistant there, the other thing I like to do is I'll have them coach, like, if we're splitting up into two teams, I'll have our assistants coach the teams. One, because I think it's good for them to, like, it's good experience for them. And two, it's also great for me then to be freed up from that and to take a little bit more of a holistic view and be able to maybe, you know, chime in where I think most appropriate.
All right, let's shift gears from your staff to the parents of your players. What are some things that you do to engage the parents of your kids to make sure that you're getting their support and that you're keeping them engaged and keeping them, quote unquote, on your side as things go along?
I think communication is the most important thing. So I really try to be proactive with our communication. I think that, you know, from now having kids who are playing sports, probably that's the number one thing for me as a parent that I either appreciate about a coach or that frustrates me is like knowing what's going on and that things aren't changing on a whim at the last minute or not being communicated. So that I would say is the number one thing is trying to do that. I've really tried in the last year. You know, I think like, you know, Mike, you're a teacher as well, so you would probably appreciate this. So many times I think parents only hear from a teacher or a coach if there's an issue. So I've really been trying to go out of my way in the last year to maybe more communicate some of the great things that our kids are doing that we're seeing at practice and just trying to make it more positive communications. And then, so those would be a couple things. And then try to involve our parents with, you know, like we have a scrimmage Saturday and we're going to have pizza and pop and everything for everybody afterwards. And just trying to get people together just to socialize a little bit in a more relaxed setting. And so, you know, we try and do a couple of those things a year. So those are just a couple things. I think just maybe, you know, being approachable. I think them seeing with me with my kids and family around is a positive. And so, you know, that's something that I think I'm trying to do more of. You know, I think last year was a challenge because of all the COVID things that were going on. And that was a real challenge last year. And I think that suffered a little bit because of that. So trying to get back to doing more of that. So it feels like it's a basketball program, and that yes, the families are part of the program as well, not just the kids who are in uniform.
How much are you looking forward to a normal season?
Oh, so much. You know what? It was just, there were so many things last year that were so frustrating. We had three quarantines, you know, not having people at the game, you know, coaching in a mask all year. You know, so many things were just so challenging. And so, yeah, I mean, look, fingers crossed because we're still obviously not out of the woods, but I'm really hopeful that this year is going to be very, very close to normal. And I think it gave us all a real appreciation the last year and a half for, you know, some of the things that we took for granted in terms of high school athletics or just athletics as a whole prior to that.
There's no question about that. I think it's just like I was talking to somebody the other day and he was telling me, I'm sick. I got this cold. I haven't been able to shake it for 4 or 5 days. And you just forget that when you're healthy, how good you feel and how much you take that for granted. And I think high school athletics has sort of been in that same position where when it was healthy and we were all doing the things that we consider to be normal, you kind of took for granted that there's fans in the stands and that you didn't have to wear a mask and that you didn't have to keep your bench socially distanced and all the things that we went through last year. And now I know that every coach that I've talked to is looking forward to having what hopefully is going to be a relatively normal season. We're still not quite 100% out of the woods, as you said, but I think we're getting there.
Yeah.
To wrap things up, I want to ask you my final two-part question, biggest challenge going forward and the biggest joy that you get from waking up every day and knowing that you get an opportunity to coach high school basketball at Westlake.
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest challenge for our program right now is really just establishing that identity from the youth level up that you know, that people, like I said to you earlier, that people understand this is what we want a Westlake basketball player and a Westlake basketball team to be about. I think we've made good strides with that. And I think we've been very fortunate this year to have a lot of youth coaches and middle school coaches who are on the same page. But that's, it certainly is something that's going to take time. And this is the first year we've used that curriculum I mentioned. And so I don't know that we'll see the dividends of that for a handful of years. But being able to kind of see that through, and I think with that, the challenge that goes along with that is also both seeing the bigger picture of, you know, those kids that are in third and fourth grade now will be high school before we know it, but not letting that come at the expense of the kids that I owe my best to every single day at the varsity level and making sure that I'm always keeping those kids first and foremost while still working towards the future. So trying to strike that balance. I would say the greatest joy is, you know, I just love coaching. You know, it was like I said, yesterday was a really frustrating, in some ways a frustrating day. I didn't think we practiced that well. And, you know, I'm laying in bed at night and I'm making notes to myself on the stuff I want to do today. And it's one of those things where it like, on the one hand, you're feeling so frustrated, but I also know, and I've had this conversation with my wife and my other coaches that like when we're not in season, there's a time where it's like nice to get that little break, but then like, I feel like there's something missing. And then it was like today I woke up and as soon as I woke up, I was like, you know, I was over being frustrated and I was just excited to get back in the gym with these guys. And then when you see things start to click and you see the kids start to believe in themselves and believe in each other, that to me is the most rewarding thing. And like, we have a great group of kids this year who really have worked really hard and also really get along well. And it just makes it fun to coach when you got a group of guys like that. And so that is just that, I think I really am anticipating, you know, I think we have a pretty good team, but regardless of our record, I think just anticipating, like, just coming and having fun with these guys every day and seeing them improve is the thing that I most enjoy.
Yeah. If you love your kids and you love your team, even if you don't end up maybe as successful on the scoreboard as you would like, you still end up probably having some of your most satisfying seasons when you have a group of kids that every day you can't wait to get to the gym and get to practice and work with those kids and help them to be better. And you just enjoy being around them. And really, again, having an impact on those kids, that's really what coaching is all about. And I think that when we start talking about what it means to be a coach and what brings us the most joy, I think what you did a really good job of describing that. Before we wrap up, Jeff, I want to give you a chance to share how people can get in touch with you. You can share social media, email, website, whatever it is that you want to share. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, so we are on all of our social media platforms. So we're at Demons Hoops on Twitter and Westlake Demon Boys B-Ball on Instagram. And then, you know, we've tried to keep our Westlake webpage pretty updated with, you know, we've been updated with records and other things that are going on there. So those are some places people can follow. Certainly, you know, I always love talking hoops with anybody, you know, so my email is just huberj@wlake.org. And always loving hearing from people and connecting with people over this game that, you know, I know you would agree has given so much to us. So it's always fun to kind of give a little bit back or just talk hoops with someone. So certainly would love to hear from people.
Jeff, we cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight to jump on with us. It's been a lot of fun talking basketball and getting to know you a little bit better. Really appreciate that. And to everyone out there, thank you for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.